Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santaferadiocafe.org, thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services. And we are at facebook.com/radiocafe, where you can friend me, as about 1,500 people have. So go ahead and do that. Now, we are, I think, drawing to toward the end of our KSFR fun drive. I know I've been saying that for a couple of days, but people have been terrific, and we want to give you the opportunity to make a call and make a pledge, if you haven't done so already, to 428-1393, 428-1393. Today, I'm going to be talking to some filmmakers about a documentary that is opening at the screen, which is on the campus formerly known as the College of Santa Fe, and I won't tell you too much about the documentary right now because you're going to be hearing about it in some detail in the coming program, and I'm not going to stay talking to you very much right now because I want you to hear about it. But if you call 428-1393 and make a pledge, a nominal pledge, you will get a pair of tickets to this documentary, which is fantastic. I loved it, loved it, loved it. I've already seen it. They had a special screening. I already saw it on the big screen in the screen, as the movie theater is called, and it's totally worth going to. So we want to make it painless for you to make a gift to KSFR today, get the fun drive over with, get us back to our regular programming, and keep community public radio on the air. 428-1393 is the number, 428-1393. Let's get the phones ringing, and let's hear this interview, which I recorded yesterday afternoon, actually. And we will be back in a little while. Make a call, make a pledge to KSFR. You've got to go see this movie, I'm telling you. Anyway, here we go. Give a call, and let's hear it. I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Chavdar Georgiev and Amanda Pope. They directed, produced, and wrote the film The Desert of Forbidden Art, which opens at the screen on the campus of Santa Fe University of Art and Design tomorrow, Friday, the 24th of September. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much. We're thrilled that the film is being shown in Santa Fe. Santa Fe, of course, is one of the magical spots of this country. You know, you are also art lovers, so I think this film will resonate.
Well, it's a fascinating film. I've already seen it, and at the screen, which is a wonderful theater, and I was very lucky to get to see it during a special screening on the big screen, which is really the way to see it, because it's a film about art and about a fascinating character named Igor Savitsky. Who was Savitsky, and how did you find out about him?
Well, Mary Charlotte, he was a very special, charismatic, obsessed man who loved art from his very earliest days as a boy, hoped to be a great artist. When he found out he couldn't be a great artist, he turned to collecting and the preservation of art, not only these incredible paintings, but also folk art from the western, extreme western area of Uzbekistan. It's called Karakalpakstan.
And as a person, he was very charming, always being able to strike a conversation with all kinds of people, from government bureaucrats and apparatchiks to common folk and the artists, the widows and children, all kinds of people. There are all kinds of anecdotes about him. For example, one time he came to the home of this artist widow, and she wanted to see whether Savitsky really wants this painting. And she made him eat this abominable jellyfish. And he ate the whole thing without complaining. And he got the painting.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, it's strange. These are bizarre collecting stories. At one point, he went into a house and saw something that looked like a painting patching a hole in the roof. And sure enough, it was. And so he got them to take down the canvas and had it restored, and it's one of their treasures. It was a dark and strange time also, very special. You know, we didn't want to paint Soviet times. We didn't want to depict them totally negatively, because when the Soviets came into Central Asia, you know, it was in many ways in the the early 20s, it was very backward. You know, women were veiled. And the artists, you know, the artists were absolutely thrilled when they got down there. It was like for them coming from the winters of Moscow and St. Petersburg to the sun of Central Asia, it was like Gauguin going to Tahiti. Initially, before Stalin, before 1932, it was a place of utter fascination to artists.
Savitsky went to Uzbekistan, as you say, and he started collecting these artists in the Soviet period who were not towing the party line. They weren't doing socialist art. What were their lives like under Soviet restrictions?
Well, at first, when these artists, most of these artists were Russian. And, for example, we have heard of the names of Chagall and Kandinsky, but those kind of people left for the West and learned from the Western influences in art. And other artists were inspired to go and see the unknown, the exotic, what Amanda mentioned, as Tahiti for Gauguin. And they went to build the revolution, to build the new kind of utopia and ideals of the revolution in Central Asia. And what they discovered there was a fascinating Islamic society at crossroads of culture, at the heart of the Silk Road. And they brought what they knew about Western modernism and Russian avant-garde contemporary art and mixed it together with Islamic traditions, producing absolutely unique and never seen before art. For example, you can see a painting of camels, but they're all cubist, things like that.
Right.
And at first, they lived in very free times at the beginning of the revolution, where everybody was inspired by the changes, the tremendous changes that the Soviet Union and the revolution brought. And slowly, censorship began to crush them and accuse them that their art was not serving the revolution. The kind of art that the revolution needed was more propaganda style, a sort of a Norman Rockwell type of art that they called socialist realism, where you see images, for example, of Lenin as the leader of world revolution, pointing with his finger at the people. Things like that. They didn't need to see some abstract paintings or anything that had too much color or unusual looking faces. So the artists' lives drastically changed. And pretty much in the Soviet Union, if you were not a member of the artist union, you didn't have the right to paint professionally. You couldn't get paint, you couldn't get canvases, there were all kinds of restrictions, and your work was not exhibited.
The fascinating thing, you say, well, what happened to them? Once the repression started, and the great paintings in the Nukus collection are really before 1932, you know, before the repression started. Once it started, there was this isolation, this very sad isolation, where painters were afraid to talk to each other, to gather together. The paintings had to be, so their earlier paintings, you know, Tanzigbaev, whose beautiful work you see towards the end of the film, he sold out to the regime and he painted propaganda pictures. You know, you see pictures in the film of, you know, an old man holding an AK-47, you know, talking to a younger soldier. That's what made his reputation, and he hid that earlier work. And we won't spoil the end of the picture by revealing his total life trajectory. But those who did not change their style really had to either hide their painting, or, as in the case of Rybnikov up in Moscow, he stopped painting and became a restorer. And if you say his name in Moscow, people think of him as the chief restorer of the Tretiakov Gallery. I mean, they don't even know that he was a painter. So the Russian artists, I mean, creativity is not crushed. And what happened with some of these artists, I mean, with Korovai, for instance, she started making masks. Rybnikov became a restorer. So it's not as though they stopped all expression of creativity, but they couldn't continue to paint.
And some of the artists paid a very hard price for their works, for choosing to paint how they felt, to think true to their vision. Some were sent to concentration camps. Some were executed for a variety of reasons, including their art. And some of them chose to live in poverty, never to be exhibited, but stayed true to their vision and painted knowing that one day the world will discover them. One day the world will understand their art.
They were hoping. I mean, the Volkov, Alexander Volkov, whom Chavi refers to, he died in poverty. The younger artists that he had taught were afraid to even be seen speaking to him. So, I mean, these artists, they had a very, very tough time.
And now Volkov's works are worth millions of dollars, and we even have a scene in the film where one of his works, not from the Nukus collection, is auctioned off in Moscow. And the film raises the question, the moral question, where the son of Alexander Volkov says, yes, this painting was sold, and now we don't know. It was sold to a private collector, and we don't know who that person is, and we don't know when it will ever be exhibited.
And the painting sold for just under $500,000.
A minor work of Volkov's.
We're talking to Chavdar Georgiev and Amanda Pope, who have directed and produced the film The Desert of Forbidden Art. And you're listening to KSFR Santa Fe, the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. And we are in our fun drive, and we've gotten at least one call, one or two calls here, and we want to thank Katie. Thank you so much for your contribution to KSFR and Anonymous. But let's keep the phones ringing. 428-1393, 428-1393 is the number. And as you can see, this is just an amazing, fascinating, crazy movie, which you can get a pair of tickets to, 428-1393. I know that probably all of you who are listening now have already heard about the great benefits of public radio and that we have been talking about it at some length during this fun drive. And we do so because there are some of you who haven't yet started to participate in KSFR, which is your community public radio station. 428-1393 is the way that you do it. Maybe there's something that I haven't thought of. Maybe we have been talking and talking and talking, but haven't been listening. What do you think are the benefits of public radio? What are the benefits of KSFR to you? What are the benefits of Santa Fe Public Radio, of public radio in general, of the Santa Fe Radio Cafe? What are those to you? Tell your phone volunteer, and if you want to have your comments read, I will be delighted to read them on the air or not. You can also donate anonymously, as you know, many people do that. They don't want to have their names read aloud. And privacy is something that I value and that many of us value. That's fine. But above all, do give a call, 428-1393. Hey, Mary Lynn, what's happening over there?
Well, it's been a little quiet. At the beginning, we had a little flurry there. And, you know, you mentioned that you have a pair of tickets for a contribution of $20. Is that not right?
That's right. For $20, yeah. You get. So it's basically like going to the movie anyway. I mean, you're not paying much more than if you were just buying tickets to go to the movie. So why not buy your tickets to go to the movie here? And then when you get to the screen, you will have your name on a list. You can go any night that the movie is running. It opens tomorrow, and it runs, I'm not sure how long. I suppose it'll depend on how popular it is, but at least this weekend, probably next week. So I can find out more about that. But in any case, give a call. Get a pair of tickets to The Desert of Forbidden Art, 428-1393. And we're giving you a little break right now so that you can actually go do that and give us a call and not miss any of this interview.
And you know, we have our toll-free number open too. That's 866-907-5737.
866-907-KSFR. And the other number, 428-1393. And let's return to Chavdar Georgiev and Amanda Pope. Some of the art that you show in this film was art that was actually subversive but passed the Soviet test. There's an example of a painting that the artist that came under questioning from the authorities, and the artist said, oh, this is about the Nazis, but it was actually about Stalin's repressions.
Yes. Actually, it's a very interesting story that Marinika Babanazarova, the director of the museum, tells, how Savitsky one day brought very crude sketches with charcoal drawn on very crude paper. And he didn't say a word. They were very gripping sketches of these broken, almost broken prisoners, very hard labor. And he put them on the walls. He presented them to the commission that was supposed to approve any new acquisition in the museum. And when the commission asked him, what are these sketches? Because they were very startling, very, very crude and very hard and painful to look at. He answered, these are just sketches from Nazi concentration camps. And when the commission left, he smiled and with a devil in his eyes, he turned to Marinika Babanazarova, his successor, who is now the director of the museum, and he said to her, you know what? These are not Nazi concentration camps. These are Stalin's concentration camps. And one day, people have to know about them. People have to see what really went on there.
And it's such a gift to people who know so much more. I mean, there's this amazing diaspora after World War II. Most people know a great deal about the horrors of Hitler, but we know so much less about the horrors of Stalin.
Well, and it's tricky. You know, we didn't want to just do a downer of a film because, in fact, one of the very special characteristics of Savitsky and his time was that he was able to work to continue to collect and to rescue these paintings, even in the worst times of repression. And one of the things that this art historian, Russian art historian, told us, he said, no matter what was going on in the Soviet Union, he said, you always had your personal relationships. And Savitsky used those so that he actually went into a monastery that the Soviets had turned into a prison for banned paintings. They kept 30,000 paintings there that that were banned. He went into this prison and he made friends with the very people who were the custodians of these banned paintings, and kind of persuaded them that he had to take some of these paintings back to his museum in the Uzbek desert, where it was kind of understood that the museum was so remote that he could get away with showing the paintings there. So it's a really wonderful story of idealistic and spirited people being able to continue to live in according to their vision, even in the darkest times.
It's a really just amazing example of, I guess you would say, genius level deceiving of the upper bureaucracy. And as you say, bureaucrats at the lower levels signed on, even though it was exactly opposite to the Soviet regime of what was acceptable propaganda. Why did they sign on? Why did they say, Savitsky, do your thing?
You know, that's a very good question. Before Savitsky started collecting paintings, spent a long time in Karakalpakstan, which is this province in Uzbekistan, in the desert with an archaeological expedition, and he fell in love with that land. He fell in love with the people, the simplicity with which the nomads of that land lived their life, and the beauty of their yurts and all the folk craft objects that they had around them, and he collected them. He had an incredible collection of folk crafts, and with this collection, he went to see the main Karakalpak leader, the communist leader of Karakalpakstan, and showed him all these beautiful objects that were his own heritage. And when this leader of Karakal Pakstan saw these works, saw these folk crafts, and saw Savitsky's passion, he realized that Savitsky is a very special man and that he needs to have a museum where he can put all these works. Long story short, he became such good friends, the leader of Karakal Pakstan, with Savitsky, that he closed his eyes when Savitsky started collecting paintings. And in fact, the Nukus Museum was the only museum in the Soviet Union where there were no communist bureaucrats attached to the museum to check that every painting that Savitsky gets is up to the standards of the Soviet Union. And that was thanks to this communist leader.
Now, just in case our audience is getting confused about where this is, Nukus is the city in Karakal Pakstan, which is a part of Uzbekistan, and it was all Soviet at that time, but now no longer is.
You've got it.
I want to go there. There's this incredible, who knew? There's this incredible museum, which really, I think when this film is brought out and if a lot of people start going there, it could add a lot of pages to the textbooks about the art history textbooks about Russian art. I mean, as you say, there's this mixture of Russian avant-garde with Central Asian art, and it's just incredible for anybody who goes there witnessing it for the first time.
Well, that's absolutely true. And one of the things that became clear through, because we have a website about the film, and so now we have a link to a travel agency where you can make arrangements to go there. And one of the things that, we want to encourage is for people to experience this collection in person, and also to visit, to go to the famous Silk Road cities on the way, Samarkand, Bukhara, Kiva. These are great cities. And we also want to encourage more support by the officialdom, by the government of Uzbekistan, for this museum. They're not, we want to encourage them to be more supportive, to see this museum as a really major tourist attraction and something that could really bring money to a country that is very poor.
Savitsky, Igor Savitsky, this great collector, he was, I think you might say, passionate beyond a level that almost any normal person can understand. What drove him in collecting? I mean, he collected, 44,000 works of art from all over Russia?
Well, it wasn't, yes, he started collecting in Uzbekistan, and then he expanded to rescuing paintings that had been banned, and that took him all around Russia. It's tough to say what causes somebody to be obsessive, but that's where he went. He put all of his life force into collecting, and he didn't have a personal life. All his friends were either artists or people who were involved in the whole art scene. It's true. That's what, as they say, that's what turned him on, and that's what he did, 150%.
It's very interesting that Savitsky actually lived in the museum. He cooked next to the paintings. He cleaned the museum himself. He did everything in the museum. The local communist leader gave Savitsky an apartment to live in, and Savitsky took this apartment, turned it around, and gave it right away to his staff that were in need of housing, and he kept living in the museum. He never got married. He never had a family, and he always kind of strove to be the best at what he does. And it was a kind of a shelter for him, a spiritual shelter, to be collecting, knowing that as an artist, he would never be great.
Or so he was told. I mean, there's this sort of painful moment at the beginning of the film where he wanted very much to be an artist, and some artist whom he admired told him that he would never be any good, and so he stopped. And of course, watching the film, you think he might have been wonderful, and this guy just didn't like him or didn't get him, but maybe he was wrong.
Well, you know, that's absolutely true. I mean, there are many artists who, when faced with that kind of criticism by another artist, would just say, well, screw you. You know, I'm going to continue to paint. But he didn't have that level of confidence.
And then he turned his attention to collecting. And one of the things that he did so well was he convinced people, without almost any money in his hand, to turn over their works of art for his museum.
Well, that is really, yes, he did. I mean, they had the first 15 years that Maronica was the director of the museum after Savitsky had appointed her and he had died. They spent trying to figure out in a sort of logical way who he owed money to and how much money he owed, and they would gradually pay back the debt. Yeah, as he said to the doctor as he was dying, you know, I can't die. I still owe so much money.
There's also this wonderful story in the film how one of the artist's sons, Valery Volkov, other artists started telling him, you know, there's this guy Savitsky who is going around and he asks for the works of our parents, and he writes on a piece of paper, I'm Savitsky, the director of the Nukus Museum. He has no letterhead, no stamp. Who is this guy? Should we give him this art? And Valery Volkov said, yes, you have to give him this art. And as a proof of who he is, I'm giving him the art of my father.
We're talking to Chavdar Georgiev and Amanda Pope, filmmakers. Their film is called The Desert of Forbidden Art, which is opening tomorrow at the Screen. And you're listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe during the KSFR Fun Drive. And the number is 428-1393. And yes, we were giving tickets away to people who make a contribution of $20 to KSFR during this program, and only during this program. We've got a bunch of tickets thanks to the generosity of the Screen. We love them. Thank you. 428-1393. Score a pair of tickets and go see this terrific movie. If you are an art lover, if you like to go to the local museums of Santa Fe, the local international museums of Santa Fe, which are so wonderful, and sometimes when we're local we forget to go to the museums ourselves, but if you'd like to go to museums, check out this film. It will, I swear, it will blow your mind. At least it blew my little mind, my circuits here at the Santa Fe Baking Company. 428-1393 is the number in the 505 area code. And we want to thank a couple of people, including our dear friend Anonymous and our friend Stefan. Stefan, vielen Dank. Thank you. And do we have a report from the control room?
Yeah, Stefan is a great supporter of KSFR. He volunteers on our phone lines here sometimes. Yes, you know, I know that there's tons of people out there listening. Mary Charlotte, your show, The Radio Cafe, is perhaps the most listened show on this radio station. And we want to hear from all of you out there listening. One of the advantages we have right now is that you can become a sustaining member. I know I see Linda on the phone right now, so I know some of you are calling in. But you can become a sustaining member for as little as $5 a month. $5 a month, and makes you a part of our wonderful family, helping to keep great programming on the air 24/7.
And if you become a sustaining member, which means that it's a monthly contribution, it's automatically deducted, it's easy, it is safe. That's something, if anybody has any hesitations about that, there's no room for errors or anything like that. I mean, I do it with several organizations, and it is absolutely safe. This small amount of money, whatever you specify, gets deducted each month from your credit card or your, I guess, debit card. So if you want to do that and you sign up today, you can also get a pair of tickets to this movie, The Desert of Forbidden Art. So 428-1393. Get the phones ringing madly. Make our phone volunteers scramble. We like it when they scramble. 428-1393. And yeah,
Mary Charlotte, you said you could get more tickets, right?
Yeah.
Because the ones that we got are gone.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Well, I'll make sure about that. But yes, okay. We can get more. Good.
So,
yay, the tickets are gone.
Yes.
But they're not gone. We're going to get some more. 428-1393. We're going to hear from one of our underwriters right now, and then we will go back to Amanda Pope and Chavdar Georgiev. went to Savitsky's museum during Savitsky's lifetime. Was it well attended?
Well, that's a wonderful question. Savitsky's personal doctor, who had his own state clinic in Moscow, tells a really good story how he first met Savitsky. He was visiting some officials in Uzbekistan who told him about this great museum, and he went there with his wife with complete reluctance. I mean, what could possibly be in this museum in the middle of nowhere in the desert? And he went there, and sure enough, the museum was closed during working hours in the middle of the day. There was nobody there. The museum was closed, and the official said, just wait. He knocked on the door really loud and really hard, and finally Savitsky came out, kind of annoyed that they were interrupting him, that he was working on restoring some craft, and he gave them a tour of the museum. He just kind of gives you an idea of how visited that museum was. Nukus itself was a closed town during the Soviet Union. It was a place where they were experimenting with biological and chemical weapons. And as such, it wasn't a destination known well to other Uzbeks or Russians, and certainly not a destination to visit. Having said that, the majority of the people who visited the museum at the time were local school children, but to them they were showing more the folk craft side of the collection, not so much the paintings. But at the same time, Savitsky used to say that one day people from all over the world would start coming and visiting this collection. This day just hasn't come yet.
Well, maybe it will with this film. What happened to the museum after Savitsky died?
Well, that's a good question. You see, as Savitsky died in 84, and at that point, the museum is owned by the government. It is a government museum. And Maronika was made the director, and then she set about transforming the museum into a modern institution. And it's been very challenging for her because not everybody in the Uzbek government has her sense of dedication towards the museum. It is now, it's open. They have a very beautiful new building that you see in the film, but they also have the old museum. And the interesting thing is, in the new museum, only 3% of the collection is on the walls of the new museum. So people are coming, people from abroad come, but, you know, it's not the easiest place to get to. So it's still very much of a challenge, though they have a website. If you Google Savitsky Collection, that website will come up, as well as if you Google our film. So they encourage, they want visitors. There is a wonderful organization called Friends of the Nukus Museum. This is an organization of people around the world who have, most of whom, gone to the museum and want to help it. And, of course, the reason we made the film is twofold. One, to establish here in this country the fact that this collection exists and we have 90 hours of material and have this material in an archive here at the University of Southern California. So that's important. And we also wanted to bring international support to the museum in a way that only a film can do.
Well, you've got 90 hours of material. The collection has 44,000 paintings. You'd have to build a skyscraper to show all of that work. I mean, even if you make the journey to Nukus in Karakal, Pakistan, Uzbekistan, and see this work, to see the museum, you can't even see most of what's there. Are there plans to make it more available? Or I suppose that's still an evolving process.
Well, this is a very difficult question, and unfortunately, there are no easy answers. Today, only 2 to 3% of the collection are on display. A lot of the works need restoration. Some of the works cannot be exhibited in the main building because they have some Soviet themes in them. For example, a Red Star or a Soviet leader somewhere in the background. And those are not necessarily welcomed in today's day and age in Central Asia. And there are some people who are critics who are saying, why do you need a collection like this in the middle of the desert where nobody can see it? Why not move this collection to Paris or Berlin or London or New York where people can enjoy it? And one of the answers that the current director of the museum is giving is that nobody wanted these paintings when Savitsky was collecting them, and Nukus and the people of Karakalpakstan gave shelter to these works. And now this is the biggest treasure that the Karakalpak people have, and it's rightfully theirs. So there's a lot of back and forth on that.
We're talking to Chavdar Georgiev and Amanda Pope, who have directed and produced the film The Desert of Forbidden Art. And a pair of tickets to The Desert of Forbidden Art can be yours if you call 505-428-1393. I'm delighted to say that the phones are ringing, and a lot of people whose last name appears to be Anonymous have called. So thank you to Mr., Mrs., Ms., Dr., and Esquire Anonymous.
Yes, and we have a couple to thank, too. Marianne.
Yay.
And Carmen Blue. I wonder if that must be the Carmen Blue who used to have the bookstore here
yes,
in Santa Fe.
Yes, it's the wonderful Carmen Blue who has already given, but she gave again. We love her. Thank you so much. I love it when people are so excited about KSFR that they give a second donation. Sometimes it's just $5 or $10, but they give that during the ending parts of the fun drive. Thank you so much to all of you. So, 428-1393 is the number, and we have tickets. We have as many tickets as we want to this film, The Desert of Forbidden Art, which if you've been listening at all during this hour, you might surmise is quite a fascinating movie. And I was thinking when I was talking to these guys, am I giving away the whole movie? But no, because we can't do the visuals on the radio, and the visuals are so much of it. I mean, there's the story, but the main part of the story is the art that inspired Savitsky and inspired the story in the first place. So, 428-1393 is the way that you make a contribution to KSFR. 428-1393. I give the number a lot.
Yeah, you know, we have both of our phone volunteers on the phone right now.
Yay.
But there is another phone that I can run and catch if it does ring.
Yeah, let's make Mary Lynn do a little bit of running here.
And then you'll have to give the last segment of this interview by heart.
That's right, because you won't be there to press the buttons.
And you can do it. We know you can do it, Mary Charlotte. Come on, folks, show your support for Mary Charlotte's show. She does a wonderful job. She puts a lot of time and energy into this. It's worth every penny you can give us. There I go. Bye.
428-1393 is the number. 428-1393. And Mary Lynn is going to answer phones. Does that mean that she's not there to press buttons? Not sure. Anyway, we would like to go now to the last segment of this interview. So let's see if that can be done. 428-1393 is the number. What were some of the challenges of editing this film? I mean, there is so much work to see, and you have to both tell a story and just lovingly show these works of art.
I think that the most important challenge was to understand what were the times and what was the world that these artists were living in, what was their daily routine, what kind of problems and struggles they had, and how what they saw, this incredible transformation of the feudal Islamic societies of Central Asia into this progressive atheistic Soviet state. They saw incredible changes where women were told to take off their veils, that now they can have only one husband, the modernization of the country where people have plowed the land for centuries using very primitive tools, and now they had tractors. And they put this transformation into their paintings. They were there, first-hand witnesses, seeing this incredible change. And what occurred to us that the best way to show this in the film is to look for archival footage from the time.
Yes, the challenge for us was that there were many, many strands to the story. And yet we had to weave them around the story of Savitsky, because in today's world, you must make your documentaries in such a way that they are character-driven. So if you care about Savitsky, then you're going to, it's like peeling an onion. Then you want to learn about his times. You want to learn about why he loved these paintings, why he went to Central Asia. Then you want to see evidence other than in the paintings of the life. So one of the places we went to is the very famous Russian archive in Moscow called Krasnogorsk. And here we found hundreds of feet of 35-millimeter black and white footage that was shot during the Soviet time. Some of this footage you see in the film that had never been, the rolls of film had never been opened, because the Soviets had many camera people documenting the great new utopia. But so they took hours and hours of 35-millimeter film, and then they just sent it in. And we had the incredible pleasure of going through this footage and discovering these amazing images, which you see in the film, and which we then wanted to match up with the images in the paintings. And that's, I think, that was one dimension. The other thing is we found through the grandson of this very special photographer whose name was Max Pensin. Max Pensin was hired by the Soviets to go into Uzbekistan and take still pictures of the transformation of Central Asia under the regime. And he took 15,000 negatives. And these negatives are in an archive that his grandson has. And his grandson gave us access to those. And this really enabled us to give you photographic evidence of the daily life of people living at the time of the artist. Otherwise, we wouldn't have had it.
It really is incredible, and I encourage people to go see the film, and don't even see it on DVD. See it at the screen, because you get the opportunity to see this huge screen with all of this, not only artwork, but also, as you say, these archival materials on it. And it does bring up that sort of crazy question of what is an archive for? You know, they're just pulsing with this images and information which nobody sees sometimes for decades.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, I just wanted to add something to the challenges of the film, since it's such an interesting and important question. Another challenge that we were facing is that in those times of the Soviet regime, people often didn't write their thoughts down on paper. So we had to painstakingly kind of reconstruct what Savitsky was thinking through what the artist's children and the people who knew him told us about him. And we found bits and pieces about what the artists were thinking. For example, in a KGB archive where, when this artist was arrested, he was given a stack of blank sheets of paper and left there for 2 days to write out his entire life from day one. This was a common practice that they did in KGB, where you kind of wrote out your entire autobiography. And we had access to this unique interrogation document, and from it we extracted pieces that we used in the film.
The film is called The Desert of Forbidden Art. We've been talking to Chavdar Georgiev and Amanda Pope, filmmakers. It opens tomorrow at the screen on the campus of Santa Fe University of Art and Design. That's Friday, the 24th of September. Before we go, I want to give each one of you a chance to just say something about public radio and the importance of supporting public radio.
Oh, boy, I don't have any trouble with that at all. You know, in Los Angeles, we have to spend more time than we like in our cars. And public radio is really my window to the world. It's such a treasure. That's all I can say. I'm sure Chavi has something.
It's very hard to add anything to what Amanda is saying. All I do have to say is that I find it very, very hard to find any kind of interesting stories or news on the regular media, and only public radio is where I'm able to get to really understand what is going on in the world, to really get to the core of the issues that are facing us today or in the past. And the public radio delivers this in a very fun way, which is incredible.
Travdar Georgiev and Amanda Pope, the Desert of Forbidden Art has a website, which is desertofforbiddenart.com, a wonderful website. I want to thank you both very much for being with us here on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you. We really appreciate your interest.
And we really appreciate your interest, all the people who have been calling this hour. We have exactly 5 minutes and 30 seconds left to give away as many tickets as we possibly can to the Desert of Forbidden Art. I'm very happy now to welcome to give away as many tickets as we can to the Desert of Forbidden Art, which opens tomorrow at the Screen on the campus of the former College of Santa Fe, now called the Santa Fe University of Art and Design. And do we have some thank yous, Ms. Mary Lynn?
We have so many thank yous, along with so many anonymy.
I love it.
Yes, wonderful. I'm grabbing some more thank yous. We have Jennifer Esperanza.
Yay!
Tyler.
Thank you.
Carol, who has been a frequent contributor during this drive and, you know, wants to go and see the film and figured, why not, since the theater is supporting us, why not support us too by getting them this way. And then another Carol called in, and Howard. Yay. And
thank you.
Let's see, Paul and Bree and Baxter, Bailey, Bella, and Brandy.
Good heavens. All the people from the B first name phone directory.
Yes, exactly. And the Schwartz family, too. They contributed as well.
We love you. Thank you.
Yeah. So, you know, we've got, I can't quite tell if somebody's on the phone, but there are some phones available. So we can have people call right now, 428-1393. Show your support for the Radio Cafe, for KSFR, for Mary Charlotte and all that she does. You know, she does so much more besides just give you great programming here on KSFR. She's a staunch supporter of public radio herself, as is her family.
428
Milk and honey.
My wonderful, wonderful mother, and who's going to be here in a few days, and we're going to probably go see this film together ourselves. 428-1393, 428-1393. And I want to send a special thank you, well, first of all, to the Screen, to Peter Grendel, who has very generously donated a bunch of tickets to us for this fun drive to the movie The Desert of Forbidden Art. The Screen is a marvelous institution that is curated by somebody who loves movies and knows movies so well that it's Brent Cleaver. And Peter Grendel does all the work, Brent and Peter, but Peter is on the floor, on the ground, doing all the work. And he's just a great person. And all of these community-minded people, like you, our callers, you, our listeners, people who are just about to get on the phone and call 428-1393, the people at the Screen, the people in so many of these groups and organizations and just individuals here in Santa Fe and in the greater Santa Fe area, actually the, well, let's see, now we're the Albuquerque to Taos area in terms of our reach. I used to call it the Tasuki to Pewaukee metropolitan area. Ah, another phone, 428-1393. The phones are ringing. I also want to give a special thank you to Mary Lynn LeBlanc. She is one of our many unsung heroes at the station. She does a wonderful job. She is so smart. She's so good at what she does. She catches mistakes before they happen. That is the best possible thing that you can have in a sound engineer. 428-1393. 428-1393 is the number. And I just want to send a special thank you to you, Mary Lynn, and to all the people on the staff, all the volunteers at KSFR who do a great job. Now, we've got 2 minutes, just under 2 minutes, to give away more tickets to the Desert of Forbidden Art and to make a contribution to KSFR. We've had a lot of calls this hour. I'm so happy about that. 428-1393. Mary Lynn, are you still there?
Yeah, I came back. Somebody else took over, and Charlotte Cook has been on the phone. Thank
Yay.
Her. She's been contributing quite a bit. And there's so many people that are supporting this station and giving their time and energy to make it work, to make it part of the City Difference Jewel. We are the radio station different. And
we are.
We are indeed. We do so much, well, unusual and diverse local programming. And our community that is so diverse in many, many ways supports that. And I just want to thank all of you out there who have shown your support. We know that you care about this radio station. And those of you that are new to Santa Fe or haven't supported before, now is your chance. Become a member of this family. Give us your support. Become a sustaining member. As little as $5 a month. It's really easy to do. Give a call, 428-1393.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at KSFR. Maybe some of you are listening, and if you're listening on KSFR.org, you can make a pledge by hitting pledge now. We're podcasting at my website, SantaFeRadioCafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime, including this one. Thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org. Marilyn LeBlanc rocks. Everybody who is here is amazing and wonderful, and thank you so much, everybody. Okay, it's 9 o'clock. You have literally 20 seconds to get more tickets to the Desert of Forbidden Art.
Right. We have Reed Callahan
to
thank as well.
Thank you. 428-1393. I'm going to go now, and I'll see you tomorrow. Oh, my God, we've got a great show tomorrow. So listen tomorrow. We've got more tickets for a totally different thing. So hasta la vista, baby. And thanks, Mary Lynn. Ciao.
Ciao to you, too.